Welcome to the Edge of Reality. Where's your edge? Give it up for your host, Allie.
Good evening, everyone. It is Thursday night, 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific, and that means we are live on the Blog Talk Radio channel, NDB Media, second episode in our new home. I love it. It's so nice and clean here. I enjoy it very much. So happy that you're going to be joining us this evening. Hey, we have an amazing show tonight. Yes, I always say that, but this week I really mean it. I have so much to talk about. We have Survivor to talk about. We have Dancing with the Stars, Project Runway we need to discuss. And then a couple of new shows that premiered this week, The Candy Factory on Bravo, which, I don't know, I have a lot to say about it. I have a lot to say. I'll be interesting to hear your thoughts. Ready for Love, which premiered this week on NBC. And we also have Tabitha's Takeover. And before I say anything else, I got to let you guys know that I got a tweet the other day that from someone who said, "Why didn't you tell me Tabitha Takeover was back?" And I said, "Oh, I did forget." And sometimes I remember to promote the shows that are upcoming, but most of the time I forget. Let's face it, I'm so busy talking about other shows. So hit our Facebook page. The Edge of Reality is our Facebook page. Like us on it. And on the Facebook page, you can see we have the spring schedule of all of the spring shows, reality shows that are coming on. So you can have it, use it, and then you'll know what shows are premiering when. I like to tell people, but then I get all angry about something that happened on Survivor and it all goes out the window. So just wanted to throw that out there. And then, as you know, when the summer schedules hit, the fall schedules, we'll make sure that we'll post them on Facebook, and then you guys will have copies of everything so you can see what shows you're interested in and what shows that you are not. And the good thing about those schedules, Priscilla, is that we cover mostly competition reality shows. That both of us, that seems to be the shows that we like the best. However, I know there's people, for instance, somebody was talking to me today about how much they're loving Bad Girls Club. You know, there's so many different reality shows that those schedules will tell you every single one, even the ones we don't talk about on the show. So speaking of Priscilla, I got to say hello and good evening to my co-host and producer, Priscilla. What's going on, Priscilla?
Hey, Allie, I am great. I apologize for the rough sound and voice. I might sound like a more of a man tonight because I have a little bit of a sinus infection, but I am amped and ready to chat about what happened this week. And just a side note, I am going to try to upload this on the Channel 3 again like I did last week. So this will probably be the last upload that I do. So if you have not made the change to the new channel, please do so. I'll put the link up on the page as well so you can find us a whole lot easier, because you're going to have to update your iTunes as well if you're getting it through iTunes.
Yeah, make sure you make the switch, because, you know, or else you're going to miss us. And who would want that, Priscilla?
Oh, my gosh. I don't know, because
absolutely
I have to feel like you're a little riled up today, and who would want to miss that?
I don't know if I'm riled up about anything. I think I'm more, I don't know. I would say that I got a bunch of things to discuss, so let's start. I wanna just get the Survivor conversation out there in the open, because Survivor was interesting Wednesday night. I gotta say,
we have a Chiefs going on right now, don't we? Or who thinks the Chiefs?
You know, I thought going into it that it was going to be, you know, a fairly straightforward episode. I did not like the fact that they were talking about sending home Michael. I thought, what a cop-out. Michael went home, but the way that it happened was so interesting and crazy. But before we talk about the tribal council, because I want to predominantly talk about that, I just want to say I loved the immunity challenge this week. I loved it. It was so simple, okay? Just a great, they're underwater. As the tide rises, they have to continue to be underwater. The person that can be underwater the longest wins. And it was a great endurance comp, but I think it was a nice level playing field. It was easy and simple, but really dramatic at the same time. And I loved it, and I loved that Brenda won.
I love the fact they had to jump down and let her know that it was over. She was in such a zone.
I know. She was so calm and so good. Like, it was perfect. It was absolutely perfect. And so, you know, since we got into individuals, Cochran won last week, Brenda won this week, perfect opportunities to take out some of the players that when you get into the home stretch, people like Malcolm, people like Reynolds, people like Eddie, you know, they're going to be much more physical, and they're going to start winning individual immunities. So you have, here you go, you have Cochran, you have Brenda, they're taking it away, and now you have these people completely open to take out. Now, they started out with a really intricate plan to get out Malcolm, and I was on board for it. Because, and Priscilla, we've talked about this before, some people last season were very hardcore Malcolm. I liked Malcolm, but I wasn't, like, you know, in love with him, thought he was the best player in the world kind of situation. So I was more than okay with him going this week. Andrea was kind of getting together. She had plans. She was figuring it out. Malcolm was trying to, you know, leave his team, go with the favorites, or go with the fans, rather. I just thought, here we go. Here's a situation where why can't they just take out the fans? How is it beneficial for Malcolm to keep Eddie and Reynolds? It's not beneficial to them.
No, that's beneficial to them, but I think Malcolm feels he's at the bottom because you got to remember they probably shot this right after the season. So they didn't know.
Absolutely. I'm sure he feels like he is the bottom of that alliance. That being said, taking Eddie and Reynolds, they're going to take each other to a final two situation. They're not going to take Malcolm because Malcolm's going to get the votes from the favorites. So he's not doing him the services of getting him. Now, I saw this really funny tweet last night about Malcolm's biggest weakness being MILFs, because you had last season you had Blair and Denise, or Lisa and Denise, and then this season you have Dawn. And, you know, he thought that he could trust Dawn completely, and Dawn wasn't having any of it. And I thought that was really interesting of Dawn, that she was like, nope, I don't want to go with this group. I'm sticking with the favorites. And pretty much turned on Malcolm, and it was the reason why his name was about to be written down. Andrea figures out that something's going on. She tells everybody to go for Michael, and I was like, oh, no, don't do it. Oh, how boring. Go for Michael. Okay, how boring. But then how it went down with Reynolds giving Malcolm his immunity item.
That was crazy. At that point, I was hoping they were going to vote for Malcolm because I thought that would have been just too cool.
No, I was hoping that they wouldn't. I was hoping that at that point they were going to vote for Reynolds. What do you want Malcolm to stay in? Is that what you want?
I really don't care. I just thought that it would be just a twist back at them, like hot in your face at work kind of thing, because why in the world Reynolds would give up his idol A? He'd be shooting himself in the foot.
Absolutely ridiculous.
And nobody knows that Malcolm has one, but that Malcolm could stand up and do that and Reynolds would hand it over, it just goes to show you what I've been saying about this season.
Exactly. I mean, did Reynolds not even think about it and give it to Malcolm?
He didn't. Well, of course, editing could have played a role, but it didn't appear as though he did at all.
Oh, my God. It was horrible. I couldn't even believe it. Malcolm gives it up. That at least an idol is taken out of the equation. That's a good thing. But I just could not. The only thing that what would have made it amazing
And it would have passed, Adria would have went home.
Well, right, right. But what would have made it amazing is that, you know, Malcolm was still playing for the other side, and they concocted this whole thing with Reynolds, that Malcolm and Reynolds were buddies, and then Reynolds gives Malcolm the thing, and then Reynolds goes home. That would have been amazing. So great and played out, but that's not what happened. Instead, you know, Reynolds gives to Malcolm. Reynolds looks like a complete idiot. Malcolm looks like a complete idiot. And Michael, a non-entity, goes home. So, I don't know. I mean, I thought it was crazy. Jeff Probst at the end said something like, you know, there's 10 savvy players left, and I thought to myself,
right,
what show are you watching? I mean, did you just see what I just saw? Did you just see this idiot Reynolds give his immunity idol to a direct threat? And Malcolm, I just could not believe it.
So I can just imagine what the one-on-ones are going to be next week about Malcolm getting that idol from Reynolds and how he's running the show. I can just see it already starting to play into effect. But you got like three people think they're actually running the show, and I haven't yet decided who is, to be honest with you. I think it's just a cluster F as far as I'm concerned.
Well, I don't think there's anybody, quote-unquote, running the show. I think that if you ask, unless you ask Philip, and then he'll say he is. Now, another thing I found interesting, speaking of what Philip, is that this episode was not very Philip heavy. As a matter of fact, we barely saw him talk. And I think that was good for the show.
Yeah, I agree.
But as you could tell, I mean, again, you're right, editing plays a part, but who was not, when they were throwing every name under the sun, whose name were they not throwing out? Phillips.
Yeah.
I, you know, Phillip is going to stay. He will be. I cannot tell you who the other two people in Final Three are, but Phillip is going to be one of them. Unless for some weird reason they take him out at Final Four, I don't know even under what circumstance that would happen. But how could they not? How could anyone not take him? I just don't know. I don't know. But we just saw Reynolds give his immunity idol to somebody, so who knows? Maybe I'm believing more your theory more and more about that they're just stupid. I just cannot believe
it. Just kind of Neanderthaling their way through it.
Before we leave Survivor, I want to talk about they announced that next season Survivor, allegedly, rumor has it, that next season Survivor is going to be former contestants and family members competing.
Taj and her husband.
Do you think Taj and Eddie George are going to come on?
I want Taj and Eddie George on.
No way. No way does that happen. And if it did happen, they would be out so quick. No. But you know, this is just an opportunity for Brandon and Russell to come back. You, like, freaking know it.
Oh, please, like, don't. No, it'll be his dad. It'll be the brothers. It'll be the whole freaking clan.
Or Willie will be there. You know, it'll be, you know that is just that is why they're doing this whole damn season, to have the several Hanch family members there. You just
please
know
don't.
It is.
Oh, please don't.
And
I won't
watch. Would we see a Boston Rob and Amber coming back? You know, that would be interesting.
I think Amber having the kids, I don't think Amber would go back.
Yeah, you're right. I mean,
I would see Boston Rob and some of his family. Like, doesn't he have a brother or a sister?
So it would be family members. And I guess it would be interesting if family members are going to be on separate tribes. So, for instance, it would be like a faves tribe like they have this year, and then family members tribe, and then they compete, and then there's a merge part at some point.
And I see the brother or the cousin or whoever that was that came on the show. I see them on.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think it would be an interesting concept, except for
the Ann's family.
What I've talked about the entire time when we talk about Survivor, which is, you know, the more that Survivor puts returning people, the more that the focus is on the returning people and not on the new people. So then the new people don't really have an opportunity to become favorites. So that when, and then when the new people return for a second time, you don't care. You know, it gets to a certain point where you just are going to lose interest in the returning people, you know, because they're not going to be people that you remember from the first time, you know.
Right.
So that's my only worry about Survivor kind of overplaying this, let's bring returning people back every single time.
I'm but kind Jeff of worried about the ones that that people like that came back, you know, that were memorable, that stood out, that came, that would actually came on the show during family time. That's what's sticking out in my mind of who they'd pick and how they'd pick them. But I don't
know. Right. But I'm just saying, in general, you know, there's only going to be so many times that you're going to, you know, there's only so many times these memorable people can play the game. And then they're going to have to count on newer members to come and play again. And you're going to get to a point where you're not going to remember who these people are, you know, and you're not going to care about them in any way. I mean, as it is, this season, faves, they're stretching the word faves out, like Dancing with the Stars stretches stars out. You know, it's like, you don't, they're not faves. Anyway, speaking of Dancing with the Stars, we should do a status update on that. You know, it's been a couple weeks since we've talked about it. I don't think we've talked about it since the premiere. And we've seen some people go. We've seen Lisa Vanderpump. It's been the latest casualty. She went this week after showing her fainting during her rehearsal time. And I found that interesting because I was going to ask you, Priscilla, because you are a stronger Dancing with the Stars expert than I am. Did Marie Osmond leave the week that she fainted?
That is one season I actually did not watch. I cannot answer.
Okay.
Sure. Well, she made the third, and I cannot remember when she fainted. I did not see that entire season.
I think, and hit us up on Facebook if you know the answer to this. There was, and who else? Cloris Leachman or someone like that, who she was definitely tired and injured, and you saw something happen during rehearsal, and that week she went home. I think that my whole point is that I think the audience sees these people kind of frail and something happening to them, and the audience kind of says they should go home. Like,
well,
they should not hurt themselves any further.
I think that was the case with Lisa. The two you mentioned, I'm not sure if that's the reason. Because Lisa was in the bottom two the first week as well, and she got saved because somebody went home with an injury. So, because she probably would have went home then. And then Cloris, she was on the bottom all the time. So I don't know if you could write it off to fainting. Now, Marie, that would probably just be a coincidental kind of thing, because I think that she had a pretty good following and that stayed. But I don't know, now that you mentioned that. I mean, it's interesting to think of it that way, but I think Lisa was going to go home anyways, which is sad because I actually thought that with as little rehearsal as she had, she actually did pretty well. And I thought
Lisa said too, which I found interesting. She said this a couple weeks ago, that she felt as Dancing with the Stars started, they were wrapping up Real Housewives of Beverly Hills. And the reunion special, I think, took place either the first week or the second week of Dancing with the Stars. And Lisa Vanderpump made a statement that kind of was like, I think that because of how I was portrayed during the reunion, I got less votes for Dancing with the Stars, which I thought was interesting, like how one could have a direct effect on the other. But I think that could very well be true.
It's very possible because you know how they like to tweet bash one another, and it's very possible because it's a tweeting game out there now on votes, pretty much. You know, it's who your following is, and well, they kind of kicked on a little bit. They had a little bit of an episode trying to get, may I say that I think it's Gleb, her dance partner. Oh my God, absolutely best replacement in the world. I could look at that guy forever. He's definitely good eye candy. And personality-wise, he's a whole lot better than Max. But, she's trying to get him to get a following for Twitter as well. So that way, they get some votes.
Right. Well, what do you think about D.L. Hughley still being in the game?
Well, I mean, I guess I'm glad that he's broke that comedian off first show kind of a thing. I don't think him throwing it back in the judge's face is going to help his game any. I think that it's kind of interesting that he's dishing it back to them in his dances like he did last week. I don't see him sticking around too much longer, but we will see. I think, Andy Dick is going to be one of those Kelly Osbourne kind of scenarios where, but I'm sorry. My mom feels sorry for him and think, just his sorry, and he's doing good, and it's a sad thing, and, he's growing and all this kind of stuff, but I think it's different in the fact with Kelly Osbourne and the fact that, we've seen him on Celebrity Rehab. We've seen him, with his personal life on Facebook and Twitter, and I don't
right.
have those feelings that I feel sorry for him. I hope that people aren't voting for him for that. I hope they're voting for him because for his dancing. Because he's had many, many, many times to prove himself that way. So he's jump-starting his career just like any of them, a lot of them that get on there. So we'll see how that goes. I think he's probably going to go a lot further than he should.
Well, there's always one person every year where that's the case, though.
Yep.
There always seems to be that one person. And when we were originally announcing the cast of Dancing with the Stars, and I said Andy Dick, I said first one off. And I'm wrong. I was completely wrong. But that is what I thought was going to happen.
Yeah, the heartstrings are tugging there. He's using, his family and his staying clean now, to his benefit. I hope it works for him. That's great. This kind of show can make or break if that's going to happen, if he's going to stay sober or not. So I hope it works. I really do. I just don't think he should stay to Final Three.
anything else you want to say about Dancing with the Stars before we talk about something else?
It's kind of a lackluster season so far for me. I'm watching it. I'm not over, excited about it, but I'll keep watching it. It usually gets better towards the end. But you got to keep in mind, Dancing with Stars has been around, and the longer that you keep these stars on, like Derek and Mark and Cheryl, who has followers on Facebook and Twitter and social media, they're going to far outbeat in voting through the American public. The new ones. Like, actually,
sure.
The Dancing with the Star one, So You Think You Can Dance one that just started? Who is dancing with? Yeah.
Lindsay.
Yeah, Lindsay. There you go. I couldn't think of it. So, I kind of hope sometimes they bring in some fresh meat to move that around a little bit, because I think that has a huge, huge demand on the voting. Is not just the stars, but the pros. So.
Absolutely.
If you move that around a little bit and start moving that around more and fading them in and out, because, Louis hasn't been on the last few seasons. Everybody loves Louis, but I think if they could rotate him in and out like that, I think it would be better for the newer ones coming in so they can get a following as well, and it isn't so dominant. Right now, so far, good dancers are hitting it, and they are voting correctly, so we'll see.
Now, oh, gosh, I was going to say one other thing about Dancing with the Stars now. Oh, ratings-wise, it is actually having a stronger season than the All-Star season last season. Traditionally, though, the spring season ratings are higher than the fall high season.
Yep.
So that could be it.
They probably did it last season to help bring up the ratings a bit, and it proves it doesn't matter. People just don't have time to watch certain seasons.
I want to move on and talk Ready for Love, new show which premiered Tuesday night on NBC. Hosts Juliana and Bill Rantic. Juliana Rantic. They have their own reality show on the Style Network. And then beyond that, Juliana is from E! And Bill is the original winner from The Apprentice. So they are no strangers to reality shows, and they're a married couple. Eva LaGoria called them America's favorite couple. I don't know if that's quite true. But Ready for Love. Let's discuss this. I have so much to say about it. Now, for those of you who haven't seen it, the basic concept is there are three guys. One is the lead singer from the Plain White Tees. One is a hospital administrator, and the other one is, I forget, but super successful, like owns a vineyard or something. I could completely make that up. But anyway, there's three guys, and there are three matchmakers that are responsible for finding girls for each guy. And they start out with 9 girls each. They go on dates, and then one girl is eliminated every episode. And the matchmakers, what I found was interesting is, so we started out, we met the first guy this week, the lead singer of the Plain White Tees. The matchmakers each brought in 4 women. I should stop saying girls. That's wrong. They're not girls or women. They each brought in 4 women, so 12 altogether. And the guy had to stand behind a partition and kind of a la The Voice and talk to the girls without seeing them. And then out of the 4, he chose 3 that he wanted to have on the show, and then one would be eliminated immediately. So the guy has 9 women to choose from, and they go on a date, and the date I thought was going to be set up in like a Bachelor kind of style, 1 guy, 9 women, you know, kind of thing. The date was, he first performed with his band, which I thought, that's not really a date. That's just you watching him work, which I found really weird. And then he had them write lyrics to a half-finished song of his. Then they had to record the song. And then, like, only a couple girls got one-on-one time. So I thought it was the crappiest date ever. But we'll talk more about that.
And the one-on-one time was not based on his opinion. The one-on-one was based on the matchmaker's opinion.
Yes, yes. Now, and the matchmakers ultimately got to choose. Each matchmaker got to choose 1 woman that they wanted to put up for an elimination, and then the guy had the ultimate choice of which one to send home. Now, that's the basic premise of it. Let's kind of get into the meat, the heart of the matter. Now, when I first saw promos for the show, I thought this was obviously going to be very Bachelor-like, you know. And in a lot of ways it is, except for you have the introduction of the matchmakers. And the matchmakers actually give the women and the guys, but the women specifically, advice throughout the entire process of, like, how to act, what you're doing wrong, what you're doing right, what you need to, you know, continue to do, which I found probably the most interesting aspect of the entire show was the inclusion of these matchmakers. I think without the matchmakers, this show would be complete garbage. I mean, as it is, it's not fantastic, but the matchmakers make the show different. What do you think, Priscilla?
I see a combination of multiple shows on the formatting of it a little bit. I wasn't overly impressed either. I kept thinking, throwing back to the old days of the dating game with the wall like that, but in a new era kind of feel.
Right.
I don't know the live audience aspect, how I feel about that.
Yeah, I thought that was a weird concept because, you know, there's an audience watching you essentially get rejected, a live audience. So you're absolutely right. It made it at times feel very game show.
Mm-hmm.
However, they're trying to, you know, like, upclass themselves so that they're not a game show, that there are, like, higher class, and these guys are the cream of the crop, and these women, they've scoured the world for these women, and, you know, these women are the best of the best. And then they put them in a game show format, and it kind of cheapens
that's
what they're trying to accomplish.
That's the problem I'm having with it. exactly what you just said. That is a problem I have with it. And I couldn't put my finger on it, but that's exactly it.
Right. So, so they have this concept, and then I think, now, at least with The Bachelor knows what it is, okay? The Bachelor is horrendous. The girls on it know what they're getting into. They know when they get into the limo wearing a wedding dress or a paper bag over their head or whatever crazy antics they're doing. They know how nuts the show is. This show, because of the fact that it's trying to appeal, like, to be a more sophisticated show with matchmakers and it's
like
more,
what the
you know,
used to be.
Exactly. I feel like I almost feel worse for the women involved because I feel like people could really, really get hurt throughout this process. And then the live audience makes it even weirder. So you're watching someone's heartbreak and they're doing it in front of a live audience, which shouldn't matter except for it's different between doing it in front of a live audience and doing it to a television audience, you know.
Did I miss something? I'll mention a video that they've seen of him. Did we not get to see that video or was it?
We saw it in the beginning. What happened was Eva Longoria introduced the concept of the show on the Today Show. And they put videos online, and then the women submitted their applications based on these videos. The other good thing about the show that I like is I thought that the three guys were going to be competing for the same women, and they're not. Each group of women are specifically for that guy. So each guy is seeing nine women, and it's not. There's not going to be a situation where two guys are
like
going to go for the same woman.
Like Mama's Boys.
Like Mama's Boys. Exactly. That's exactly what I thought when I thought of the concept. That's exactly what I thought. A little-known VH1 show. Good job for pulling that one out. Absolutely proud of you. Absolutely proud of you. But I just felt, I don't know. I felt like this is going to feel skeevier than The Bachelor. And the way that The Bachelor, everybody kind of knows what they're getting into for the most part. And this show, people might be legitimately looking for love. And then you get, like, really rejected.
I think right now they're teetering a real close line on what way it's going to go. I mean, the live show aspect, I think if they're truly, truly wanting to make this about love, it's got to go.
Right.
In my opinion.
Right.
And that concept is just, it threw me off totally.
Right. Absolutely. I completely agree with you. This is also a show where you know, everybody who has listened to this podcast with any sort of regularity knows how I feel about two hosts. And just because they're a married couple, and I understand why they would put a married couple on, I feel like it is still not okay. I feel like this is a one-host show, and they don't need that audience part of it. That part
I don't think they need the audience part either. I think that they could make the two things work without having the live show, because those Juliana and Bill do bounce off of each other very well. I mean, just their comedic relief. They're more comfortable with one another.
They do. They bounce off each other well. You know, and Jillian is obviously a TV host in real life, so she does that very well. You know, but it's not a show, unless they were doing more mentoring thing, I don't know. Like, having the hosts and the matchmakers, it seems like a lot. I don't know. That was my whole thing. It was like, I felt like the matchmakers could actually almost host the show. You know?
If they would do away with the live show part, that they could take that aspect out of it. I think they could still make it work by not being a live show and having the two and making it work. I'm not sure how that would happen, but I think they could do it just because of their personalities.
So what we saw on this week's episode was that 8 of these women that the guy chose were complete strangers. But one woman was someone that he knew very well, who they were just quote-unquote friends, although they were really friends with benefits. And they'd known each other for 6 years, and she had come on the show because she wanted to confess her real feelings for him. He got her, picked her out of the 9, and then she was the first one eliminated when, you know, I guess they realized it wasn't going to work out to be anything but friends. And first of all, it was very much shades of like Casey
Deanna.
No, not Deanna. Who's the bachelor this past year? Who's on Phantom of the
Paradise? Oh, Sean.
Sean. Thank you. It was very much shades of Casey and Sean, because you remember Casey came back on The Bachelor, knew Sean, came back to hang out with him, and, you know, Sean kicked her out pretty quickly for, like, no apparent reason. And this was very much the same kind of vibe, where this poor woman, like, put herself out there on national TV, and the guy, like, knocked her out first. So that was also pretty uncomfortable. What did you think about that whole situation?
It was very uncomfortable, especially at the end.
Right.
And very uncomfortable when everybody got to hear their personal conversation.
Yes, that was weird. I thought the date was complete garbage. I thought the date was horrendous.
What kind of hell do you do with 9 people? What kind of a date could somebody have with 9 people? Come on.
You play beach volleyball. You go on the polar bear plunge. The Bachelor does it. The Bachelor does it.
But they're different than The Bachelor.
You hear Chicago and you dance with the Ferris. You know, like, there's lots of crazy shit that you can do. But my problem was that it was supposed to be a date where he got to know them, but how could he get to know them when he was performing?
Right, I agree with that.
And how could they get to know him when they already know that he performs? So it didn't make it was a chance
it
for the Playboy to
promote their band, who has been in the limelight for the last several years, to bring them back in the forelight. I got that right off the bat.
Right. Well, yes. That's my whole point. But as a date, it was horrible. And then writing lyrics for the song, I didn't quite get either. And what I find interesting is the matchmakers each have 3 girls or 3 women to start out with. And these 3 women are kind of like a weird team, when you think about it, because the matchmaker is kind of responsible for these 3 women, and they do things together as a team.
They wrote the song together. They sang
the
song together. And then you're going to battle them against each other in the end.
It's a weird show
to
have a team. You know what I mean?
It has large possibilities, I think, to get back to what the old Bachelors used to, the feel of it be, but it's what we talked about before. You either take a right turn or a left turn, and I think they're taking a left turn where they could very easily take a right turn by mixing it up a little bit.
I just think that all of the things that they are doing to make themselves different from The Bachelor are actually the parts of the show that I don't like the most.
Okay, for an instance, you know how with Fashion Star, when they came out, NBC show, once again,
right.
Too much dancing, music, blah, blah, blah. This year, they finally zeroed it back a little bit, went backwards, rewound, and didn't make it as busy. And I so much like
I love Fashion Star this season. We haven't talked about it that much. And it's not doing that great in the ratings. But it's also on Friday night, so, you know. But
yeah, it's a horrible night.
Fashion Star is so good this year. And this was a perfect example of taking aspects of the first season. And Bravo for a long time did a really good job at this, too. being able to take the concept and tweak it in a way to, like, really make it pop, Fashion Star did a wonderful job for its second season of, you know, putting it all together. And I really hope that they realize, NBC realizes that, you know, Friday night time slot, it's going to do what it's going to do, and that they continue to have, you know, one season of Fashion Star per year, do it in the spring, do it or the summer, do it on a Friday night, or, you know, whatever. And I don't want them to give up on the show, because I think it's really, really good.
I think that we've talked about before, and NBC has put a lot of money and hired a lot of people to develop the reality part of it, and over the last 3 years that I know of. And they need to stop recording these shows. And this is one thing I hate about The Housewives. So far out where when you have an issue, you can make the change. You know what I mean? So when you see that it's going to flop, instead of pulling it off the airwaves like they used to do, like after two episodes, they can tweak it.
Right.
The third show or the fourth show in, if it wasn't recorded so far ahead of time. And outdated,
right.
Though. That annoys the hell out of me.
Yeah, you can tell how far in advance they do these seasons, which I always found really weird as well. Yeah. Ready for Love, just from a rating standpoint, did not do well, especially with the voice lead-in. So it's not,
Has tweaked and going to be one of my best shows, I think, for the season.
Yes.
So NBC's getting there. They're tweaking it. Sometimes I think they're a little slow on it when they can make it faster.
Absolutely. speaking of Bravo, I want to bring up Candy Factory, which premiered this week as well. Now, Candy Factory, Bravo did it as like a special last spring. Where they did like a 2-hour episode of it to see if it would be effective and people would watch it. They decided to bring it back. And for people who don't know, basically Candy Factory, Candy Burgess, Real Housewives of Atlanta, who is a Grammy Award winning songwriter, takes two people, finds these two people, puts them through a boot camp, essentially, where they do a performance. She writes a song for both of them. They record the song. They do choreography. They get a makeover. And then they perform the song in front of a live audience. And the one that the judges like the best, they win the chance for the song to be released and a music video. Okay, so that's the basic premise of the show. Now, it's a different way of doing a song competition show, because every week it's two new people. They're one-offs. You don't have to be invested in the show. You can watch it whenever you want. You can watch it in whatever order you want, because the formula, every episode, it's a different group of people. It's two different people.
You don't have a good storyline to follow.
Right, exactly. You don't have to worry about, you know, the final seven or, you know, whatever. So I liked it when they did the 2-hour special. This episode, they brought two people in, and they brought one guy who was, you know, this dance guy who is very self-conscious, and he, you know, he's gay, and the whole premise was that, you know, he had a hard time coming out to his family. And then the woman is this 21-year-old girl who sings. She's an African-American girl who sings country music, and those were the two people they brought in for the first episode. The songs that Candy wrote songs about their life, and the guy's song was called "I Am a Winner." And both songs in general were really bad, okay? These were not songs that you would ever hear playing on the radio. These were songs that were very quickly put together for this competition, you know? And so the fact that you had to hear the songs over and over and over again made it hard to watch. Because, I mean, with lyrics, the one guy song is, I am a winner, I am the shit, I am not a loser, I have confidence. You know, it was not good. And to hear it over and over and over again, you were like, oh, my God, who could ever, you know, why would anyone ever pay for this song? And so it made the show very isolating because you knew that these two people were not going to be in any sort of part of the music industry after this one episode of this one show. You know what I mean? So if you're watching the show, you have to kind of watch it for what it is and don't think of it as a launching pad of somebody's career because that's not what it is. In this episode, the woman ended up winning, and her music video looks like, you know, like a Janet Jackson from the 80s, like What Have You Done For Me Lately, or like a Disney princess music. I mean, it was a very lame video, a very lame song, and they're trying to produce these songs so quickly, and Candy can do better than that. So I don't know if they need to do only specials of this where they can really focus on the two people. And I don't know what the answer is. But and I'm not saying it's a horrible show, but I'm just saying that it is what it is solely for the purpose of this hour. You know, it is entertainment for that hour. It's not anyone's launching pad. And I got to say, though, out of all the Real Housewives, because Bravo is essentially launching individual shows for any memorable housewife on any season of any, you know, housewife city that they have, this show is by far my favorite one because it has some sort of vision, and it's not just, you know, watching Kim Zolciak be crazy.
You mean Phaedra's funeral homes aren't going to be interesting?
No, it is not. It is not. So I like it from that standpoint. And I like Candy. I've always really liked Candy. So I like seeing her. And I like seeing her out. I like seeing her do her work.
In her element.
You know, in her element. That's exactly right. But it's not going to blow anybody's minds. The music or the show.
Which really surprises me because Candy is pretty particular about her image when it comes to that.
I don't know if they thought that, and maybe I'm wrong, and please hit me up on our Facebook page, The Edge of Reality, if you thought these songs were really, really great, but I just thought they were really horrible, and like really, she said, I wrote these songs about your experience, and then it was like the most like superficial, shallow song, and the girl wants to be a country singer, and it was a pop song, and they kept on saying that it was a pop, kind of like Taylor Swift, and it was a pop song with a little bit of country, and I was like, where the hell is the country? It's all like keyboards and pop, and, you know, I was like, that's not what this girl wanted to do, so it did it, you know, enjoy it for what it is all I'm saying. Take it for what it is, you know. But I do like, out of all the shows, I Real Housewife shows, this is by far my favorite. And like I said, I like Candy. I've always liked Candy. You know, I've always enjoyed her on Real Housewives. So there you go. Bravo also premiered Tabitha Takeover this week, too, which I'm really excited about. We haven't had a season of that in a while. And Tabitha, it used to be Salon Takeover, but now Tabitha takes over anything, which I find really interesting. You know, for a Salon Takeover, it makes sense because, you know, she's a salon owner. But, like, last year she took over a yogurt stand, and I was like, you know, why the hell is she taking over a yogurt stand?
But she can.
Because she can. That's exactly the answer. That is exactly right. So that's weird. But the premiere episode, she was in the salon, so she was an element. It was an awesome episode. And I love Tabitha. You know, we love Tabitha here on Edge of Reality, Priscilla.
And I forgot that it actually started airing. I've seen I like a little marathon going on with it, but I didn't give a thought that it was starting back up.
And this is Bravo, by the way. This is Bravo at its best with shows like this. You know, Bravo is really kind of picking weird stuff. The Kathy Griffin talk show was canceled this past week. You know, they're really trying to find different things, and some work and some don't work. But this is the show at its best. Bring back friggin' Sheer Genius. What the hell is wrong? Why do you not have Sheer Genius back? I don't get it. 17 friggin' new shows that you're premiering, and Sheer Genius is not one of them, and I just don't understand it. It was a good show.
It was only on a couple seasons, too, and they pulled it, and they brought that back. Why did they? I mean, it can't be that expensive to produce.
They found Tabitha. Tabitha was a finalist on the first season of Sheer Genius. That's where Tabitha came from. Like, you know, bring it back. It was so good. It was so good, Bravo. Andy Cohen, what are you doing?
He's too busy with his own show to pay attention to anybody else.
I know. I think that's a problem. I really do. I want to mention Celebrity Apprentice because we haven't talked about it in a couple weeks. We haven't talked about it since Omarosa got fired. And Dennis Rodman fired this past week. And, you know, the entire time, I was just thinking, Bret Michaels picked the worst possible team in, like, the history of the world. He got to choose basically everything he wanted, and he picked the worst team ever. I mean, Bret Michaels. And then he left the first episode, so he couldn't watch his downfall. I mean,
he would have so lost even if he stayed around another week, the team he picked.
The team has been horrendous, and they need a massive switch up in teams. They needed it a couple weeks ago. And
yeah.
I'm really surprised. I mean, except for they brought Trace over, that has been the only.
They're making
change.
Him look like a jackass.
They are. I mean, they really need a massive shakeup to kind of get everything back in a row. I mean, Stephen Baldwin practically does nothing, but because he's on the good team, he's been able to skate by. I mean,
The thing about the Baldwin boys, especially Stephen Baldwin, he knows how to play these reality games. He's been in them all.
Sure, absolutely.
He knows ins and outs of how to stay and how to go and how to fight when he needs to. And I'm waiting for the day that they chomp his ass down.
They need to switch up the teams in a major way. This week, and by the way, NBC is changing it up in a couple weeks, and they're going back to the Apprentice, 2-hour Apprentice. But 1-hour Apprentice is so wonderful, you have no idea. Like, it is just so wonderful.
I agree.
To have a 1-hour Apprentice.
By the way, that Real for Love, whatever show, definitely not a 2-hour show. No freaking way. Not.
Yeah.
Can't do it.
The 2-hour shows are hard. The 2-hour shows are hard.
Unless you're not, like, in love with the show.
Right, exactly. You know, but, yeah, absolutely. But Celebrity Apprentice will go back to a 2-hour format, and that bums me out. But this week especially, Melania is the client. She has a skincare line, and the task was really lost, like 3 minutes into the show when they misspelled her name. I mean, nothing else mattered. And I knew nothing else was going to matter. You misspelled the lady's name. I didn't like how they threw the copy editor under the bus. All of them looked at that cop, at her misspelled name several times. They were all familiar.
Oh, yeah, and the camera pointed it out every time.
I know, but the copy, they were like, oh, it's the girl. It's the girl who was doing the script. No, it's not. It's you. You know, all of you should have been looking. And none of them saw it. And it was Dennis Robbins. There was no way. I'm sure in reality they wanted to keep Dennis Rodman longer, but because he was on the losing team so much, and Omarosa was in the same position, it was like there's only so many times that you can not fire someone before you go, they got to go. And that was Dennis you know, it was Dennis's week, even though I'm sure Donald Trump did not want to fire him.
No, I don't think he did either. And actually, I'm not sure who I would have fired then. I'm not sure if Dennis would have been the person. Yes, he's project manager, but Trace, I sometimes kind of got the way he would answer the questions and throw him under the bus. I think he might have done it intentionally, especially the way he like threw it out and said, "You want to sign off on this?" So
yeah.
I think sometimes
that's editing. They might actually do that every week, and we just saw it this week as like everybody saw it, and it's
right.
Completely wrong. Yeah, I mean, Dennis should have gone home this week, and he did, and there was no way of making it so he didn't. I'm just, they need to switch up the teams at this point. I mean, they need to separate Mary Lou and Lisa. They need to, you know, we need to see on the other team who are the weaker links and who are the stronger links. Because it's not even like the other team is, you know, just dominating. Like, they're just kind of phoning it in and still winning. You know what I mean?
Oh, that pass was evident. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, it's not been hard for them to win these past several weeks. So they definitely need the change up. Oh, and before we go, we only have a couple minutes left. I just want to bring up another pet peeve of mine, since we're talking about two-hour shows and one-hour shows and all that kind of stuff. Hell's Kitchen. I'm enjoying this season, actually. I'm watching it. I'm into it, whatever. The last 2 weeks, they have pulled a I'm not telling you who goes home until the beginning of the next episode. That makes me very angry. Do not make me watch an hour of a show and then not give me a payoff at the end. You know, and they've done it for the past 2 weeks. And you know it's going to be anticlimactic because that's what Hell's Kitchen is. And you know that, you know, this past episode ended with four people removing their jackets. And you know they're just no one's going home and they're just switching teams. That's how it works. And it's like, just do that at the end of this episode. Don't do it at the beginning of next episode. Give me some sort of payoff for my time. So that has bothered me a lot. And when Biggest Loser used to do that, I would be so angry because Biggest Loser was a two-hour show. And then every once in a while they would pull that and I would go, oh, no. People just watch the show for 2 hours. You give them some kind of payoff. Oh, it would drive me nuts. And Hell's Kitchen is doing that right now. And Hell's Kitchen, do not do that. Like, give me a payoff. Give me something for my time. Reward me for my time and loyalty to your show. Oh, it bothered me so much. It's like, you know that we're switching teams. Everybody knows it. Everybody knows it. Please just do it so we can start off the week doing something new. I don't know. Anyway, with that, sorry for my rant. Sorry for my rant, but it just drove me crazy. Anyway, that's it for us. How time flies when we're just having fun and ranting about Hell's Kitchen. I want to thank everybody listening live, everybody listening to archives. Make sure that you switch over so you know that your podcasts are automatically updated. So that's important. And Facebook Edge of Reality. Make sure you like us. And we talk about a lot of fun things on the Facebook page. So make sure that you are joining us. I want to thank Priscilla. Thank everybody listening live in our archives. And we'll see you next week. Have a good night, everyone.
Night, everyone.